It will likely surprise none of you to learn that when I was in fourth grade and the day arrived that people in my parish could first sign up to be altar servers who were that age, I demanded that my parents take me bright and early to the rectory so I could be the first one to sign up. I actually thought the timing of the visit was a reasonable compromise on my part. If I had had my way, we would have been tailgating that thing the night before. Low-fat milk, as we used to call it then, Entenmann's chocolate chip cookies in hand, in the parking lot, sleeping out, just to make sure no one was ahead of us. I'd like to think that I had primarily good motivations for wanting to be an altar server, to be close to the Eucharist, to be able to help the priest, to get a good seat in crowded liturgies. But also on the list of motivations, and I can remember this very clearly, was sitting in the pews and looking up at the altar in my parish, an altar very much like this one. And I just kept wondering, what's on the backside of the altar? I mean, was it marble all the way through? Is there a cool design on the other side of the altar? Is it hollow? Is it something I haven't even thought of? And it was from the server's perch that you could answer all of these questions. I know what you're thinking, and let me tell you that, yes, I agree. That's very peculiar. And I wish I could tell you that this tendency to look at small and maybe irrelevant things is something that left me as I aged, but it hasn't. It happens to me every time I read the scriptures. I often find myself looking at peripheral, and as I suggest, maybe even irrelevant things. Take the gospel story that we just heard from Mark, the account of the Last Supper, of Jesus' gathering with his friends, what we recall every time we celebrate the Eucharist together. The reading is an obvious choice on the solemnity of the most holy body and blood of Christ, what we used to call Corpus Christi. It prompts us to think of that meal that Jesus and his friends shared as they celebrated the great Jewish festival of Passover. We think of the bread and the wine. We think of taking, blessing, breaking, giving. We think of eating and drinking. We think of all of those things, and we should think of all those things. But for the life of me, ever since I was a little boy hearing this story, all I could ever think about was the guy with the jar of water. I mean, what is that all about? That really is in many ways the back of the altar of this whole story. That thing that just doesn't seem all that important or relevant, but I actually think in many ways, it could be front and center. Because who he was then is who we are now. What in the world do I mean? I mean that if we follow Mark's narration of this story, we come to the conclusion that this great meal that we talk about would have never come about if it weren't for this mysterious man with the water, whoever he was. Jesus needed him. Jesus needed him to show two of his disciples to a certain house in Jerusalem. He needed the man to introduce those disciples to the master of the house. And he needed the master of the house to show the two disciples where the guest room was. In other words, the Last Supper was not a one-man show. When we listen to this account of the Last Supper, and when in just a few minutes we listen to an account of the Last Supper during the Eucharistic prayer, it becomes clear that this event would have never been realized if there weren't lots of people who were willing to help Jesus, to become his partners. Not as clients, not as employees. We so often think of Jesus as God who needs absolutely nothing. But today's story that Jesus tells us that Jesus needed a cast of characters, not least of whom was this mysterious man with the jar of water. Things aren't so different for us today and every day when we celebrate the Eucharist. Jesus needs this cast of characters. If our celebration is to be authentic, if it is to have the same texture, the same feel as that first Passover did when our mothers and fathers in faith gathered in Egypt in slavery, when Jesus and his friends gathered for supper to mark the beginning of a new covenant, if it's to have that texture, then our celebration can never become so myopically focused on Jesus, or worse, on the priest, that we forget about the man with the jar of water. That is the role that all of us play in the celebration of the Eucharist. We must not forget that Christ needs us. Now, this isn't an invitation to start patting ourselves on the back or to start wagging our fingers at God to remind God what's what. But it is an invitation to remind ourselves that the Eucharist doesn't just fall out of heaven and land into our hands. The Eucharist is not something that we make or that the priest makes as if this altar were just the final station on an assembly line. The most holy body and blood of Christ, Corpus Christi, is not something that we get or something that we make. It's something that we become. So how do we become it? How do we become the body and blood of Christ? By being the man with the jar of water. By showing up. By listening to the scripture and remembering the great things that God has done for us in history and that God is doing for us right now. By presenting the bread and the wine at the offertory. By presenting our hopes and our fears, our worries, our anger, our impatience, our joys, and placing them on the altar alongside the bread and the wine. By believing that when we do all of these things, Jesus is really present to us again, giving us all that we need to pattern our lives after his. Today, the solemnity of the most holy body and blood of Christ is not a celebration of something that Jesus once did for us. It's a celebration of what he now does with us, with our help, with our faith. May the Eucharist we share today and every day make us ever more deeply partners of Christ in this endeavor. May it make us ever more profoundly the most holy body and blood of Christ.